Welcome back to Your Zest Life. I'm your host, Genevieve, and this week we continue our Sober series with Women S Community. Now, as we're in our final week of Sober Curious, we've been putting a lot of reflection opportunities as well as next step actions for navigating what a relationship with alcohol looks like. From the feedback we've received, this has been a transitional step in how our participants in the Sober Curious series identified their relationship with alcohol versus how they view themselves moving forward. Now, I can't speak for everyone involved, and I know each experience is unique, but for me, implementing Sober Curiosity has felt very empowering and liberating. I wouldn't identify as a big drinker, but I definitely enjoy my margaritas with my husband, as well as the opportunity to travel to different wine vineyards with friends. But when I practice Sober Curiosity, I really have come to realize the influence that alcohol has had on many areas of my life. Financially, it's been a major win. My date nights with my husband are far less expensive, as well as our groceries. I also don't shop under the influence, meaning my Amazon purchases are way less impulsive. I've noticed that I'm more present, I'm more self-aware, my anxiety has gone down significantly, I sleep better, I'm also less concerned with what others are thinking about me, and I'm more self-aware of what my own needs are. I'd like to think that I'm more patient with myself as well as others, and I've noticed a more positive perspective in areas of my life that may have brought out negative energy in me before. One last big thing I've really noticed is just how much our society operates around alcohol. So when we want to meet up with friends, it often revolves around a happy hour or engaging in alcoholic beverages. Even the simple joys of life, such as going for a hike outside, celebrating a birthday, or hosting a game night, feel this need to be amplified with alcohol, as if this beauty of nature and joy of celebrating another human isn't enough. Now, I say these things in no judgment. If you are listening to this after enjoying your mimosas at the baby shower you just attended, or if you are currently enjoying a glass of wine as you listen to this, but rather to challenge the thought process behind why we choose to drink when we do and what we're looking to get out of it. Personally, I'm still navigating what my relationship with alcohol will look like after all of this. But for now, I've been enjoying learning more from the conversations I get to have with women who have transitioned to a sober lifestyle. This week, I get to sit down with Mary Tilson, who is an international yoga and meditation teacher, retreat leader, and certified addiction recovery coach, who is currently based in Bali, Indonesia. Mary created Sun and Moon Sober Living as an inclusive space for those who are sober and sober curious to access support through online resources, training, and free online community gatherings. Mary also hosts the Sun and Moon Sober Living podcast, featuring interviews with leading experts in the fields of addiction recovery, mental health, and holistic well-being, as well as a variety of inspiring guests who are thriving in sobriety. Inspired by her own recovery journey and decision to get sober 8.5 years ago, which was the catalyst to profound transformation in all areas of her life, Mary's aim is to normalize conversations about addiction and highlight the bright side of sobriety, which is an empowering choice that everyone can benefit from. This conversation is one I encourage you to take time for when you can be fully present, as Mary shares a lot of insight on the ups and downs of sobriety, as well as the challenges that have come along with it. But with the challenges, just as her podcast focuses on the bright side of sober living, Mary also opens up about the gifts that sobriety has given her. Everything from the importance of community, silencing the external noise so we can go inwards, fighting the social pressure to drink, the honest effects of alcohol on our brain chemistry, and debunking the myth that sobriety is boring. I loved this conversation, and Mary is actually part of how I got into earning my own yoga certification. You'll find that her energy is very contagious. She's super infectious and really someone who I think brings a lot of light and love into this space. And I think that can be a great resource for anyone who is looking to either go into a sober lifestyle or a sober curious lifestyle. For more resources and support in your own sobriety or navigation with your relationship with alcohol, check out Sun and Moon Sober Living and Mary Tilson, where you'll find free resources for holistic sober living. I want to take this moment to thank Mary, as well as all the women who have been contributors in our Sober Curious series, for opening up about their stories and experiences. We at Womenist Community could not put on as successful of a series without your contribution. If you would like to join Sober Curious, there is still time to sign up through womenistcommunity.com/sober-curious. And if you're a local resident in the Treasure Valley, I invite you to attend our Cycle Bar Womenist Benefit Ride on Sunday, February 13th at 12:30 p.m., led by myself as well as our board team member, Aaron Barker. I hope you enjoy today's episode of Your Zest Life. Welcome back to Your Zest Life. I am your host, Genevieve, and I'm excited to be back. This is our third week partnering up with Womenist Community, Sober Curious. If you've been joining us the last couple of weeks, you've heard a couple of our guests, and our guest today is coming from all the way over in Bali. Mary, I'm so happy you're here today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on this today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so, so glad that we can reconnect in this way talking about sobriety.
Yeah. And it's, I want to backtrack because it's interesting. I was reflecting on, so you're a yoga instructor, and I'll let you kind of introduce yourself, and there will be a intro for you before this too, but you are such a key component to my kickoff into the wellness industry and my shift in career. So it's funny. It's such a small world. I met Mary through someone who, when I was working at Women's Health Magazine, they knew you because they were in the Chicago offices. And I can't remember how it happened, but I said that I was going to Bali. I was getting my yoga certification. And I think you were in Cambodia at the time. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And you were
I was
so
at Hari Haralaya.
Yes. And you were there for a while, right? You worked there for like a year or two?
Yeah, I worked there for a full year, about 40 retreats.
That's amazing. And I just remember you were so gracious and so kind and answered all my questions. And so it was really nice to be able to connect with you again and to see everything that you're doing. I feel like you'll give a much better introduction of what you're doing now, though, and just a brief summary of, you know, who you are, why are you in Bali right now, and a little bit of what brought you into the suburb sober Sun and Moon Sober Living.
Oh, well, thank you again for having me on here. I'm really, really excited. We've gotten to connect in, you know, different ways that have been really meaningful, and also feel like connect the dots of my own journey, you know, going from media to teaching retreats to now being in the sober space. So thank you. Right now, so as you said, I'm living in Bali, Indonesia. You know, as with many people, the pandemic has shifted a lot of what I'm doing work-wise. So prior to, you know, borders being closed and travel coming to a halt, I was traveling pretty much full time for most of the last 8 years, teaching yoga and meditation retreats in all different places. And, you know, so much of my journey with yoga and what led me into retreats and travel was, well, I mean, my decision to get sober was the catalyst for all of that. So it's been, you know, deeply important to me throughout this whole time while I've been creating these retreat experiences and sharing the path of yoga, not just on the mat, but really the philosophy of yoga and yoga as a lifestyle. It's been really important to me for a long time to serve the recovery community. And after a while, I've felt almost a responsibility because, you know, I didn't really have what kept me struggling with addiction for so long. And, you know, I could go into my story more, but, you know, the first time I got sober, I was studying at the University of Colorado in Boulder. I was pushed into outpatient rehab by my parents, and I wasn't able to stay sober for very long at all after that because I just thought, you know, there's no one my age that's doing this. I'm never going to have a social life. I had all the stories playing in my head about, you know, the horrible, boring life of being sober, which is so laughable to me now when I think about what my life has been like since I got sober. But, you know, it took me like a whole nother, you know, 4 or 5 years of like really intense struggling after that with alcohol again and, you know, some of the other substances I was getting involved in, until I got sober and, you know, then kind of discovered yoga and the community that I found there and then all the people that I've met since I started traveling. So I've felt this real sense of responsibility to show people that, you know, help end the stigma of what addiction looks like, what alcoholism looks like. And there's even, you know, I recently heard someone say like sober shaming, like there's, you know, that there's no, we don't need to feel shame about being sober, that we can actually celebrate that life choice. So I've wanted to start something around sobriety and recovery and create a community around that for a really long time. And because I think, you know, I was traveling so much, I didn't really have the space in my schedule to be able to do that and do it. You know, of course, my perfectionist tendencies are like, I have all this idea of like everything that it needs to be. And it just seemed like such a big thing and such a big responsibility. And then the pandemic comes and, you know, I see meetings, which are such an important part of people's recovery are, you know, you can't gather in person anymore. And they say like isolation is the biggest threat to addiction. Mm-hmm. People are under just simmering in stress at home alone. So people who have never experienced addiction before are experiencing it for the first time. You know, so many people are struggling with their mental health. So due to a number of different factors in my own personal life and what I'm observing, I just felt, you know, now is the moment. So I just started Sun and Moon Sober Living with, I just started sharing about it on social media. I opened up an account, like, you know, with anyone, if anyone is listening and is struggling, because I think one of the biggest thing for me was it took me a long time in my sobriety to speak openly. That every time I do, and I have been for a while now, but people just like, it's like the way that you reached out right away. You know, I start to hear from, as soon as I shared that I was doing this and launched the podcast, like I get this messages like the ones from you that's like, oh, I'm starting a Sober Curious Challenge. Like we think sometimes that we're alone in this, and then we start to like be a little bit more brave and share, and people just gather around, and that's been really cool. So yeah, it's been very reaffirming of something that I wanted to do for a long time, just, you know, having conversations like this. But so I started Sun and Moon Sober Living. You know, I've been sharing on social media, I have resources on the website, and then the podcast, which just started.
I love that. And it was, as soon as I saw it, and I love the name of it. I was very drawn to the name. And like I said, I've been following you, and you've always just been, you know, in an age where on social media, there's just a whole mix of, you know, positive, but also these toxins that I would say that comes from it. You've always been just like this light and someone who puts out genuine inspiration. And so when I saw this, it just completely aligned with who you are. You know, if you want to say like what your brand is. And I want to go back to something you said about sober shaming, because I think that this is something that we're seeing less of. And it was something that I was taking note of. We, you know, and I don't know if this says something about, you know, maturity or as you age, but I'm sure this is something you can relate to, where like back in college or like pre-college, if you were the person who was not drinking, you're almost shamed for not drinking and made to feel bad or like something was wrong with you. Or now, even as we've gotten older, you know, I had a friend who said, like, you'll know what, I can't remember the exact words, but just talking about how if a woman's not drinking, it's assumed that she's pregnant, or, you know, like you can't just have the freedom to choose to not drink. But the positive side of that I'm noticing, though, is like we had a holiday party and a bunch of our friends chose to not drink. We had a kombucha tasting, which still has a little bit of alcohol in it. But for, you know, an environment where, especially around the holidays, there's a lot of alcohol involved, a lot of partying, it was really refreshing to see a mixture of people genuinely connecting, you know, in who they are. So I love when you talk about how we're getting away from this idea of sober shaming. And how do you think that we continue to move in that direction?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you bring up college, like I can't, it's funny. It was so present when I was in college. Was like I can't, it's impossible to imagine, you know, myself, because we build our identities around it, you know? Yes. And I think that's part of it. So, you know, I think a really big thing, most importantly, is about having conversations, being willing to have the conversations like this. So I think something that, you know, and I speak to family and friends about this too, like who are still drinking. And I think everyone has a responsibility to understand the real impact that alcohol has on us, you know? So, you know, while maybe not everyone is going to choose to get sober, unfortunately, we have been fed all of these stories, which are really conditioned into us. Like I, even when I got sober, I still thought of alcohol as something that is helpful to relax. Like I was kind of, you know, I really leaned on that glass of wine or bottle or two bottles of wine to go to bed eventually. But the reality is, like, I think number one, we need to be willing to face the facts about the real impact that alcohol has on us. So like from a mental health perspective, you know, a lot of people, I talk about the effect of like alcohol and anxiety a lot because there's this story that it helps us wind down or it helps us relax. It actually does the opposite. If you understand the way that it shifts your brain chemistry and you're genuinely studying with struggling with anxiety, you would never go near alcohol because it actually, although it's a depressant and in the moment while it's in your system, it makes you feel like you're winding down. It actually causes the brain to release stimulants that make you more on alert, high alert, and more on edge. So, you know, there's this vicious cycle where the alcohol wears off, you're feeling extra anxious from the alcohol, but you're only associating that feeling of relaxing with the alcohol. So you drink more and it gets worse and worse. So I think for one, we need to have more awareness. Also the way that it affects, you know, our whole body, our sleep, put more responsibility on alcohol companies too. The same way, if you think about like cigarette companies have to share about the warnings and show those awful pictures on them. It's not like glamorized and something that's, you know, turned into this thing. So I think because then if we really understood that, I think it would be a much more socially acceptable decision not to drink, you know, like one of the things that really gets to me is the way that the wellness industry has aligned with alcohol companies.
Yes.
I have such a problem with like vino vinyasa and beer yoga. Oh my gosh, a woman was telling me about, I forget what, you know, of course there was like the little tagline, but it was about like champagnes and mammograms. I can't remember what they called it, but it was just like, cause I had said, you know, it's not like you go, cause when I was talking about my problems with alcohol in the yoga studios, I was saying something like, it's not like you go into the doctor's office and they hand you a glass of champagne. And she was like, well, you know, you are seeing it in some of these settings. So if we understood, like if we better understood, we would be horrified if our yoga teacher tried to offer us alcohol in a class, you know, it would be like a major red flag, but we just don't know that because we've very intentionally been blinded from a lot of that information. So I think that's a big one. And then just having conversations, you know, like really like allowing people, and this is happening a lot. And what you're creating right now with this is really, really important, is just giving more voices and faces to addiction and to struggle with alcoholism. Because as long as we have this stigma of an alcoholic looking one way and it's someone who's like lazy. And, you know, that was one of the biggest gifts of being in the rooms of recovery is you look around and it's like all these people gather together. Like, it's like, I would go to meetings in Chicago. I'd like sneak away and hope nobody sees me. I'm like, and there's someone who's like coming out of a law firm, a doctor, like a college student. Yes. Somebody who's come in from the streets. Like it's everyone, it's the full spectrum. So I think we need to give more faces and voices to that struggle to help end the stigma.
When you're celebrating, I think you're absolutely right. And that's where I've referenced this the last couple of conversations, but I think it's really important to reiterate that we do have this idea of what an alcoholic or what someone who has a complicated relationship with alcohol or just a negative relationship with alcohol, which the more I talk about this, the more what you just talked about is so important, that if we understood the impact of alcohol on us, on our nervous system, on our brain chemistry, you know, on our ability to relax and unwind, and it's very eye-opening. And I think that you're right, identifying that this isn't just the, you know, middle age old man in the bar, you know, beer belly, that it can be anybody. And I know you're celebrating 8.5 years of sobriety, which, congratulations, that's huge. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and I know that for you, it wasn't a just as soon as you made up your mind, right? You talked about your parents in college and you went to a really big party school, which probably made it even more challenging. But it took you, you know, a couple different or however many attempts to really make that change. What do you think were some of the factors that went into that? One, you know, you've talked a little bit about your age and being, you know, in your early 20s, being like, this is going to be the most boring life ever if I choose to get sober. But what do you think prevented you that first time or the first couple of times from going into a sober lifestyle?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, I would say, you know, it has to be a decision that you make for yourself, for one. Mm-hmm. And the first time around, I was, so just to give you a little bit of backstory, like I had started drinking pretty early on, like early on in high school. And I started, it was, you know, I started to recognize that all the social anxiety of going to high school parties with like the older, you know, people who are a couple years older, and it was so much easier when I was drinking. So that became like that, using alcohol as a social crutch is something that I developed at a very young age and a very, very formative years too. So it was very, very difficult, almost impossible to imagine my life at Boulder and the, you know, the, my social life, particularly that I built without that, because so much of my identity was formed around it. And, you know, I think sometimes we forget that we don't get the opportunity to build confidence, you know, in ourselves when we're always drinking to feel okay with ourselves. So anyway, I wasn't ready to make that decision for myself. The reason that I ended up in rehab that first time was because I had had a series, I started blacking out for the first time at that time. And I had had a series of really bad, like one bad night after another, where I was just waking up and I couldn't connect with the person who was doing these things. And I had so much shame. And, you know, I'm someone who really values my friendships, you know, my relationships with my family. And over the course of like the months leading up to that, I was just doing things that were so out of character. So I wanted so bad to escape that and to end that, but I was still so attached to drinking. I still couldn't say like, oh, I'm going to give this up, because it was like, how could I live my life? Like I'm, you know, there's just no way. So when I went to treatment the first time, I went with a mindset that was, I'm going to figure this out. Like I just need to get away from Boulder, because I kept blacking out. I was on this horribly vicious cycle. I'm sure anyone who's struggled with alcohol can relate to this in some way. It's like, you're in that pattern where you're like, I'm not going to black out. I'm going to moderate. Like I'm not going to get drunk. I wasn't saying I wasn't going to drink, because I knew I was going to drink no matter what, but I was like, I'm just going to have a few glasses. I even made this joke with my friends where I was like, my friends call me Mar. So I was like, I'm going to be moderated Mar. And I was making this joke out of it, which was actually like to make light of like something that was like really, really difficult. Like it was too hard for me to say, you guys, I'm really struggling.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry. I know I'm not acting like myself. So I'd be like, I'm going to be moderated Mar. So anyway, moderated Mar never lasted or existed. The point that I'm trying to make though, is like, you need to make that decision for yourself. And I didn't go into rehab deciding that I was going to get sober. I went in there with a mindset of, I'm going to figure this out. And when I go back to school, I'm going to fix my relationship with my friends, and I'm going to just go on and be a normal, moderated person and, you know, live my life how I want to.
Yeah.
And so, it's amazing. Like when I look back at that first of all, what I just want to acknowledge, like, what a privilege it is to be able to go get that kind of professional treatment, and one that not a lot of people have. So I feel that in one just makes me feel awful when I think back on my mindset in there, because I just thought I was picking and choosing what I wanted to listen to. I wasn't being totally honest with my story. So I was, at the time I'd been experimenting with drugs, didn't mention that once because I thought the counselor was going to not let me go back to school. So yeah, the biggest thing I would say that I learned from that was that you have to make the decision for yourself. You know, people can't thrust you into that. And that's the first step. And it's, you know, it appears in yoga too. It's just this willingness to surrender is, you know, to acknowledge, like, you know, accept the things I cannot change. The serenity prayer is like, has so much wisdom to offer everyone, but just accepting, I wasn't ready to surrender and accept. So I think that's the first thing, is to just be willing to, and surrender is not a, it doesn't make you powerless or weak, or it's actually the most empowering thing you can do, is to recognize, you know, especially when it comes to addiction or struggling with alcohol, to be able to say, like, this thing is beyond me. I wanna focus on everything I can control and reclaim my life. That's like the most empowering decision you can make. So that's the first thing, is surrender. And then what's helped me massively is community. Mm. Like, community is connecting with people in recovery that, you know, that just hearing stories, remembering that this is, you know, not something that is because I lack willpower or because I failed at something, and to really build a solid community of people that, are share your struggle, are going to be there to support you. That was a really big one. And integrating yoga into the mix too. And one of my teachers, who I feel like I can't have a conversation with recovery without mentioning her, Nikki Myers, has developed this incredible, you know, system which blends yoga and 12-step recovery. And I had actually done that. So when I actually got sober, I was combining yoga, embodiment practices, meditation, mindfulness with treatment. I went back to treatment. And that time I was ready to commit and be in it. But that is incredibly important and powerful because, you know, as she says, the issues live in our tissues, as many yoga therapists say. And, you know, we move through life through our bodies. We experience life through our bodies. So to use our bodies as a tool to keep us rooted in the present moment and not reliving past memories, or for me, it was always like, oh, how am I going to go to like the New Year's party, or how am I going to attend weddings without the champagne toast, or how am I going to date anyone? Like, am I never going to get married? Yeah. So like all that crazy stuff that happens in the future, like yoga really keeps us present. And, you know, classic recovery saying one step at a time, it's like that ability to stay present is incredibly important.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned some really interesting things. Even when we're producing our content, one of the things is, you know, we're looking at Valentine's Day coming up. Like, what are some ideas you can do if you're celebrating Galentine's Day? Because Galentine's Day is a big marketed holiday they've made up, really, that like wine companies will sell to women. And as a, you know, if you're single and you want to hang out with your girlfriends, just drink wine together and forget about it. And so we're coming up with different ideas of like what to do instead. And you start to realize, like, it takes away from our creativity as far as different events or different activities to do and different ways to engage and different ways to connect, because so many of our lifestyle decisions revolve around alcohol. I mean, even look now, I was watching some video and it was someone on a hike and they're bringing out, you know, their bottle of wine that they brought up with them. It's like, and that's one of the most simple, beautiful pleasures that our world has given us, is like this beauty of nature. And we still feel the need to incorporate alcohol. And I know for you, so at what point then did it become your decision? When did you take that power? You know, what was happening that made you decide, this isn't about moderation now, this is about me taking the power and taking the reins?
Well, first, I love what you just said about how it makes you more creative with activities to things to do. Yeah, I love that you say that because it's so true. But so, you know, I will say what helped me realize that it was the right decision. I always tell people this too, who are, because recovery is not a linear process. So I look back at that time that I went to treatment and, you know, relapsed, and all of these things serve a purpose. And I always reference, I always quote this because it's so true for me. Somebody said to me once, there's nothing worse than a mind full of AA and a belly full of booze. Because it's like, when you know, like, as those seeds were planted, basically. And I started to dip my feet in the recovery space. I'd made these beautiful connections. I'd started to experience life sober. I had that 6 weeks, despite the fact that I went and drank right away. That was very, very valuable. And I also knew right where to go when I wanted help. Like, I knew that at any moment I could walk into an AA room and I would be welcomed with open arms. And I know that that AA is not for everyone. So I just want to say there are so many recovery groups. Now I know, I mean, online, you know, like, there's so many Facebook groups for all different types of people, connecting like-minded people. There's so many in-person meetings that are not associated with AA and the 12 steps. So, but anyway, so that was all part of me. And despite the fact that I wasn't ready then, I went to, you know, I went back to school at Boulder, finished, you know, graduated, ended up in a job that was probably as much you could possibly get away with drinking in a work atmosphere. And I started to get into yoga. I mean, I'd been into yoga at that time. So I think, you know, all of that stuff was in me, and I knew that this is not who I wanted to be. And I was, you know, I was working in media strategy in Chicago, and I absolutely love that industry. I met so many amazing people. I'm very, very grateful for my time there. However, there, for someone who struggles with alcohol, there are so many opportunities to drink infused with work. So while there are so many people that don't do that, I was the one who was organizing beer carts to go around at 5 p.m., who was taking advantage of every opportunity to meet with sales reps, to go to these like long sit-down dinners followed by clubs in Chicago, followed, you know, going to concerts, like all these things. And so the way that that was impacting my mental health over a while, after a while, trying to juggle the stress of that job, because it's very, very work hard, play hard. What happened was, to be fully honest, I was, you know, abusing drugs like Adderall, and I was using drugs on the weekend, and my anxiety levels were just off the charts. I mean, I remember I would wake up so hungover from the night before, getting ready to go to work. And I would, like, I remember times, because I wasn't prescribed to Adderall either. So I remember there were times I would call one of my friends and I'd be like, can I please take a cab over to like get one of your Adderalls? And it was just like, I felt disgusted, like just the way that I felt. I was like taking these really expensive cabs from in the morning from one side of the, I haven't even shared this like with so many people, but from one side of the city to the other, to get an Adderall so I could go to work as I'm like feeling my hangover come off. And I just felt terrible about myself. And there was a couple times actually I started like crying out for help. So I remember one time it was like 3 a.m, I'd been out all night, and I called my brother and I was like, can I please come over? And I like, he wakes up in the middle of the night, we're sitting in his apartment and I'm totally blacked out. And I was just offloading everything. Like, I was just like telling him what a mess I was. And I was like, and then of course I wake up the next morning humiliated. I started doing it to my best friend. And then ultimately I called my parents and I was like, I was really honest about, you know, I was just getting into like substances that I shouldn't have been on the weekends. It's starting to scare me. And yeah, so fortunately my family has been incredibly supportive, and you know, they were very quick to be like, we'll help you get through this. I checked myself into outpatient rehab that time. So that was fully by choice, but it's not like, I just woke up. You know, some people kind of describe almost like a spiritual awakening where it's like they just one day wake up. I had to experience the suffering for a while. Like it was drawn out for a while, but I feel like, so I think there's so much benefit for people, even if, even in that gray area drinking, when it's like, you're not really sure if it's a problem, which I was in for years and years, to start to expose yourself to podcasts, to recovery communities, just listen to people's stories, you know, because we silence these stories. And so it becomes this hidden thing, or we did before. Like I never, I wasn't hearing recovery stories until I got in the recovery rooms of AA. We keep them secret, but I think because of that, it becomes a little bit less relatable. So,
That's so interesting. And I thank you for sharing all that, by the way. I know that that takes a lot to share that. And I think you're right, sharing these stories, people, we see connection in each other, right? We're not all that different. And you've referenced that in our conversation, but I think what I'm curious about then is at the turning point of your career, essentially, and your lifestyle changes, you know, you mentioned the need to be very present in who we are. What sort of questions were you asking yourself at this point that led you to this shift of trusting in yourself? I mean, you have to trust yourself at that point, I would imagine, a great amount to make that kind of a change and that lifestyle decision.
Yeah. So I just got really committed. I knew exactly what I was getting into when I went to treatment the second time. So I knew that I was going to be going completely cold turkey. I was giving up all substances for the rest of my life. As long as if I could maintain that, that was what I was hoping for. So, I blanked on the question a little bit there. Yes.
No, you're fine. I said a few different things, but I think the biggest thing is, you know, when I think of being present and when someone needs to, you know, sometimes that's meditation, sometimes that's journal prompts, but reflection can be huge. And so I'm curious if there were, you know, questions that were running through your mind at that point, or just different thought dialogues that enabled you to make that commitment.
Yeah. Sorry. That's a really good question. Fine. It's the irony of a question on presence and then blanking.
No, you're fine. You're giving great stuff still.
So yeah, what I was saying is I knew that I was going to be committing to not only working towards a lifetime of sobriety, but doing it one step at a time in the present. And so doing that hand in hand with yoga, I was going to yoga classes as often as I could at that time. I was going at least, you know, 5 days a week, I would say, going to classes at my studio. And after I finished treatment, I was living in Chicago and I was actually really worried about what the thoughts that were going to be going on in my mind between having all this time filled with outpatient rehab. Because mind you, I was still working at a digital agency in Chicago. And I started going to outpatient rehab on nights and weekends, which is so crazy that I managed to pull that off, because at the time I was literally working till like 8 or 9 PM every single night. Wow. So I had to find a way to get off work at 5, and that's a whole nother story. But, so I was very worried about what that time was going to look like after, because I still had all of my best friends who are amazing people. Don't get me wrong, but you know, our social life had a lot of alcohol involved. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And I ended up being at a class and they asked, you know, they were promoting a teacher training, which I never thought I was going to teach, but I just thought this will be an amazing way to fill my time so that I'm not having to say no to going out to bars like every single night or pass up on the glass of wine at home or whatever it is. So, you know, it's interesting that you bring up presence. I was actually thinking about this earlier. When you get sober and you're also practicing yoga and meditation a lot, you can't really deny like these kind of voices, you know, this feeling that you have inside. Like, I feel like your intuition and your connection with yourself gets really stronger. And so I had, you know, I had a friend of mine come out to visit from Denver. And so this is like pretty new into my sobriety. This is like 4 months in. And she was like the friend who had the best job right out of school. You know, she, you know, super high paying corporate job. And it was just like, oh, wow, she's really got her shit together, you know? And within, you know, pretty soon after that, she came out to visit and she was like, I'm going to go to Thailand. You know, I'm going to do this 3-month trip to Thailand and, you know, I'm taking a sabbatical. And that was right in that moment where I had been doing all these mindfulness practices and yoga and meditation. I was newly sober. And I just was like, I'm going to go too. Like, wow. I'm going to quit my job and go too. Wow. And it was the weirdest out of character thing because like, I didn't even go and study abroad. Like I had not done, like I traveled a ton when I was with my family growing up, but doing something like moving to the other side of the world, but like, you know, without any experience, like admittedly, I'm ashamed to say now I couldn't even pinpointed Thailand on a map at that time, but I just instinctively knew. And that decision transformed my entire wow. life in such a powerful way. So yeah, the piece about presence is like something that it's almost like you have to be ready for it. There's a reason that people like to dull out, you know, from in many ways we can use alcohol to dull out. And you've made, you know, big, bold decisions with your life too. So, I mean, is that something like has presence and these mindfulness and meditation practices helped you with that?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's when I decided to, and I've shared this on another podcast, on another episode, but yeah, meditating in Bali. It's like, I just had that. And it's so, if you haven't, I think we've all had a moment in our life where we've had like this aha, but it's a totally different feeling when you're in a meditation. And I just remember like sitting on a mountaintop and there was like beaming, glowing light. And you just feel within you like a change needs to shift. And that's when I decided to leave New York because I knew it was no longer good for me. And yeah, and it's hard to say like, you know, what would have happened had I not made that decision. And it was a really difficult decision to move home. It was very humbling to have made this commitment to move out to New York and be like, this is where my new life is, and then move back home. And this is actually a really interesting parallel that I hadn't really thought about. But when I moved home, I ran into a guy that I went to high school with. And I'll never forget that he said this, but he said, wow, I can't believe that you just, like, that was your dream. And now you're home. If I was you, I would just sit at home and drink all day. And it just goes to show like how we handle our emotions. And I wanted to like break down and lose it in that moment because it was such a reflection, probably more on him, but also on our society. That like, that's how we cope with things. So yeah, to answer your question, I mean, I think being present in those moments, if you can sit with your stuff, if you can sit with what's on the surface that you are resisting, like we know what's best for us. Like we know how to take care of ourselves, but we just need to give ourselves the time and space, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I always, you know, I say like, I'm so grateful looking back that I did have a problem with addiction and alcoholism. Like I'm very, very grateful for that because had I not been forced essentially, I mean, by my own will, but had it not been very clear that I have to make this decision, I would have never ended up, you know, quitting this job in media. I'd just gotten promoted. I, you know, I had so many great friends around me. I would have never quit my job and then got up and moved across the world and moved to Asia and done retreats and all these things. And, you know, it's so easy, I think, to get like influenced by all these external voices, like someone to say that to you and to say like, who's to say that's what you should be doing? Like, is that like, but we have all these external voices around us and the pressure to drink is just one of those, you know, and obviously it's so much more than just that, but to be able to quiet that noise and also not dull out your own internal voice to, you know, because if we're constantly, you know, and it's not only alcohol, like there's so many different addictive behaviors, like look at the way social media has penetrated into our lives
totally.
Or dulling out on Netflix or whatever. Like if you're not willing to silence all of that noise and really go inward, then you just miss out on so much richness of life. And you said it so beautifully earlier about, you know, what you mentioned, somebody having bringing a bottle of wine up to the top of a mountain. And it made me think like, I remember during that first trip when we went over, when I went out to Thailand when I was newly sober, I went to school in one of the most beautiful campuses on earth in Boulder. And I was so drunk the entire time. Like, honestly, it blows my mind. My family lives there now. And they live in Golden, which is close by. And I go into Boulder and I literally get tears in my eyes. And part of it is this just emotional, remembering so many memories of, you know, I had an amazing time, don't get me wrong, but I was just like, why did I feel the need to get so out of my mind? But I remember being in Thailand and going on this hike and just getting this like rush of just awe and being on this high, which I had only felt from drugs before, honestly. Wow. Like, and I was just like, I felt so emotional because I just thought like, this is what I was looking for. And it's so much better, you know, like there was never any need, you know, and all of those substances, all of those things kept me from experiencing this in a natural way. Wow. You know, I would have never ended up in Thailand on a hike. I probably would have been like pre-gaming the hike if I even ended up there, you know, but it allows us to experience just the beauty of life in a totally different way.
I'm like, this needs to have a second part to it, our conversation, because it's the truth, right? And the lens that we choose to look through life with. And it is, we start to taint it with substances and we think that we're enhancing it, right? But it takes away in those moments. My sister had referenced something that it got to the point where not only was she numbing out the painful moments, but she was also numbing out like these really beautiful moments and like joyful moments. And, I know we don't have a whole lot of time left together, but I did have a couple more questions for you. One, because I think that this is a really interesting topic we haven't talked about as much yet, but you had said something about how, I want to say it took you like 4 years or something to even get comfortable sharing your sobriety. And so what advice would you give to people, you know, who have made the decision to be sober, to lean in that? What advice would you give them to gain confidence in that?
I would say the first thing is, well, you know, it's important to acknowledge, like, I see now people who come out and they make these amazing accounts online, like, and they're 3 months sober and they're like super outward about it. And that's not going to be for everyone. And so I don't, you know, it took me 4 years to speak really openly about it. And I think the most important thing is that you are finding the people that you're building a community of people that you trust. So for me, that started with my group therapy and outpatient treatment. I wasn't even comfortable speaking openly in AA rooms at that point. And that group slowly expanded. So I told my best friend, who was my roommate at the time, she knew from before I went into rehab. And I think sometimes it can be really, really hard to tell friends, but, you know, have faith in those friends that you really love and trust. Like, I mean, some of my friends, I wish I gave them more credit from the beginning and just was more open from the very start. But it's so important that you have community and start to share with some people, you know, and that will slowly expand over time. And you want to make sure that you don't cross over your own personal boundaries and, you know, start sharing before you feel ready. So yeah. I had told my supervisor at work because I needed to, in order to get time to make sure that I could get to my treatment program. But what's really helped me is just every time I open up to someone, I never want to say never, but vast majority of the time it's been incredibly positive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I think it's helpful for you and it's helpful for everyone to just start sharing little by little, because everyone that you speak to about that is going to have a totally different view about alcoholism and addiction and all of that moving forward, you know? And like, I love what you were saying about how now you're doing this with a group of friends and you're trying to figure out like what to do for Galentine's. Mm. You know, you can start to make really positive decisions together. So, you know, like, my friends, we started brainstorming other things to do. Like, one of my best friends and I, because Chicago for example, was a really difficult city to live in. So we started to get really creative about all the different things that we could do that didn't involve being in a bar and drinking. So yeah, what's really helpful, I think, is just slowly expanding that group. And now, I mean, now I would tell people, I'm never encouraging people to spend more time on social media and stuff that you need to, but there are so many people in the online space who are like making hilarious and relatable videos. And, you know, I could just list off so many of them, but it's been really helpful just expanding that circle and practicing speaking about, you know, being sober and being in recovery.
I think that's great. Community is everything. Community and expanding your idea of, you know, what you do for entertainment, what you do for relaxation. I think all of that is super helpful. And I'm so bummed because I have so many other questions for you, but you are just, you're everything that I remember from the last time that I spoke with you. And I'm so grateful for just the time that you've given and the energy and the resources. I want to make sure that we end with where people can find you and what you guys offer or what you offer on Sun and Moon Sober Living.
Yes. So the website is just sunandmoonsoberliving.com. And I have some free resources on there that you can download and subscribe to. The social media Instagram handle is at sunandmoon.soberliving. And I host regular meetings on Zoom. So, you know, with community being so important, I love having online Zoom meetings. And I always tell people, I just want people to be able to come and it to be inclusive and people to feel safe. So there's no stigma, no labels attached. If you're already sober, that's wonderful. If you're sober curious, if you've got a loved one and you're trying to understand it better, I like to kind of take a very holistic approach. So, you know, the topics that we discuss in there are very much about building a foundation for well-being in all areas of your life. It's about sustainable self-care. So yeah, that community space, I'm always sharing about meetings on there too. So, and there's a podcast. So all that is linked in the website.
That's wonderful. I love what you're doing. And, you know, if Women as Community can ever support you, please let us know. I think what you're doing is really, really important. And I'm excited for when our paths get to cross again, hopefully sooner than it took for them to cross again this time.
Oh, me too. And I just want to say too, like, I can't even tell you how excited I was to see that you are putting on this whole challenge and, you know, online support around sobriety and just getting people excited about the Sober Curious movement, because it really is. It's such an amazing, I mean, it's such an amazing lifestyle choice. Mm. And I love that you're empowering people just to choose, because it is a choice and it's a choice that will really do so many things for all areas of your life.
It's such an empowering decision to take ownership of your life and how you want to choose to live it. So I am like, I'm soaking in all your information, and I'm going to go back and listen to this again. And I'm so grateful. So thank you very much, Mary.
Oh, thank you.
And we'll talk to you soon. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this episode brought some zest into your life. And if you think this podcast will bring value to someone else, please feel free to share. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. You can also find more insight on my Instagram at Genevieve_Nuttinghauer, and click the link in this episode's description where you can find my website. All right, I can't wait to rally with you next week.